Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Two weeks ago, I was reviewing insurance claims from my office manager for office visits that were denied by insurance companies. There was one claim where the payer denied the submission because obesity was used as the primary diagnosis. Even though obesity has been widely recognized as a disease, this remains an all too common occurrence. What was particularly perplexing about this claim, though, was that the insurance company had approved the patient's prescription for a brand version of semaglutide used to treat obesity. So the insurance company was willing to cover the high cost of the treatment of obesity, but not accept the diagnosis of obesity as a primary reason for their office visit. This is one small example of dysfunction in how obesity is treated by insurance companies, employers, government agencies, and society in general. How people with obesity are treated in the medical world is in desperate need of reform. Hi, I'm Dr. Nick Pennings, Chair of Family Medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine and Executive Director of Clinical Education for the Obesity Medicine Association. And today we are embarking on the first of a series of podcasts on advocacy for patients with obesity. I have with me today Laura Davison, MD, and Emily Weaver, nurse practitioner. So let's begin with some introductions, Laura. Let's begin with you. Tell us a bit about your background and your interest in advocacy.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me. I am the director of the medical weight management program here at West Virginia University, and West Virginia is one of the states with the highest rates of obesity. So we have a lot of obesity to treat, and unfortunately, sometimes running into some barriers with having access to treatment. So I got pretty interested in advocacy and joined the OMA's advocacy committee.
Well, that's great. And certainly that is a state in need of treatment and advocacy. Emily, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, yeah, thank you also for having me today. My name is Emily. I am a nurse practitioner. I work also in North Carolina. So I work with True Weight Loss and the director of patient care there for the last 2.5 years. And so we focus on medical management of patients with obesity, but also on non-surgical weight loss procedures.
Okay, great. So Laura, let's begin with you. What is advocacy and what does it mean to be an advocate?
Well, you know, I think that's a great question because I think sometimes when people think about advocacy, they think immediately about national advocacy, testifying in Congress, speaking to senators, that kind of thing. But I really think that everyone has the ability to be an advocate. I think, you know, physicians and healthcare providers really are in a unique position to be able to do advocacy because we're actually used to it. We advocate for our patients every day when we treat them, when we refer to a specialist, and especially when we do those prior auths. Every prior auth is advocacy for our patient, trying to get them what they need. So I think we're actually really used to being advocates. We just don't always think of ourselves as advocates. So I really like to get people to think about starting small with little things here and there to advocate, even if it's just in your local community. And then you can build up as you get better at it and learn some of the ropes, you can kind of take bigger and bigger steps towards advocacy on some higher levels.
Yeah, that's true. We do advocate for patients on a daily basis with all the challenges that they face. And it's, I think, a good idea to step outside our box and look at other ways we can impact that. Mm-hmm. So Emily, why is it so important that we advocate for people with obesity?
Yeah, well, I think that really the most obvious reason that it's important for us to advocate for our patients is that obesity affects a huge number of patients in our country. You know that over 40% of adults have obesity, and that number has continued to rise. I heard a physician speaking on obesity once, and he made a comment that, you know, really in the United States, obesity has become the only remaining quote unquote acceptable form of prejudice in this country. And that is unfortunate, and it's problematic for the patients that we treat, you know, whether it's in workplace, in media, or amongst patients' own family members or friends, there's this perception or this portrayal of patients or persons with obesity as less than in some way. And so, that unfortunately can spill over, and we know it does spill over into healthcare and the way that patients are treated there, that it may cause patients to delay treatment, to not show up for visits at all. And so it's extremely important that we as physicians and advanced practice providers are out there figuring out ways that we can make healthcare more accessible for our patients.
Yes, there still is a very strong tendency to blame the patient for their weight. And I think that permeates on all levels, as was an example that I gave here today, that patients are responsible for their weight and they should be fixing it. They shouldn't have to take a medication, that they shouldn't have to have surgery for it. They just need more willpower. And that's just a gross misperception of the understanding of the pathophysiology of obesity and the challenges that our patients face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. I think that it's one thing for us to say with a patient to get on their level and to empathize and say, hey, yes, I know that medication is expensive and I hate that too, or I know that surgery isn't covered on your plan and that's hard. But you know, advocacy is really taking it a step further and getting out of that visit and saying, okay, that shouldn't be this way. And what can I do to fix it?
Right. It definitely shouldn't be this way. So Laura, if somebody is interested in becoming an advocate for patients who have obesity, where should they get started?
Well, I think one of the most important steps is really understanding the healthcare system that we are in so that you can advocate. You have to know the rules first. So I think something that people don't always understand is that obesity is not considered an essential health benefit. So, you know, when a health plan is covering other diseases, they can carve out obesity and say they're not going to treat it. And that's in general for even just for the visits. But for medications specifically, I think some people don't really realize that if you have commercial insurance through an employer, the employer has to opt in to anti-obesity medication coverage. So I think it's really important to understand that, because you have to know where you're advocating. And so you really wouldn't necessarily keep filling out the same prior auth with bigger arguments. You actually have to go back to the employer, to the human resources department, and say, you need to add anti-obesity medications for coverage. And so, you know, I have a letter that I sometimes give my patients that they can give to their employer for that, or they can just talk to their HR department themselves. But that's really where that advocacy needs to be. Now, you also have to know it's a little different for some other types of coverage. So, for example, Medicare does not cover anti-obesity medications. And so in order for that to happen, some of us are working at a different level on some national legislation called TROA, the Treat and Reduce Obesity Act, which is a bipartisan bill. It's been introduced for over a decade. And this is an act that would allow Medicare to cover obesity in terms of who treats it. So dietitians, for example, can't treat someone and do the medical nutrition therapy if their disease is obesity. They have to have another disease in order to be able to get that covered. And then the TROA would also allow Medicare to consider coverage of anti-obesity medications. And then another thing is Medicaid. Each state has different rules for their Medicaid formulary. So you also have to learn what your state formulary is for Medicaid. And that would be advocating on a state level to get that coverage. So you have to know these rules and understand where the advocacy would have to take place.
Right. So there's a number of different kind of components of that. I think beginning with the commercial insurance companies, I do think it's important that people realize just because you have a particular insurance doesn't mean it's going to be covered. And patients will ask us, well, I have this, you know, XYZ insurance. are my medications covered? And we can't answer that question because we don't know the details of the plan that that employer has negotiated with their company. So it is important that you have to break it down to the employer. And then when employers are not covering those things, you're right, we need to advocate upon for our patients and give them information and inform them, because many patients don't even realize that some employers will cover it and some won't.
Yeah, and a really good resource that OMA just produced is they have an infographic brochure type thing that patients can actually give to their employers to explain about the fact that they have to opt into coverage. And it gives some good reasons why the employer may want to consider that, you know, having a healthier workforce, a happier workforce. Those are really good reasons to consider adding that coverage.
That's great. And where would they find that?
At the OMA website.
Okay, that's great. And then certainly talking to your representatives in Congress and on for Medicare and on a state level for Medicaid to advocate for coverage for anti-obesity medications.
Yeah.
All right, so if someone says, I already do a lot of things to advocate, but I really feel passionate, would like to focus my efforts to have an even greater impact. How can they expand their reach? Let's begin with you, Emily.
So I think that similar to some of the things that Dr. Davison was sharing earlier, it's really about learning who your contacts may be. And one thing that I think is important to know is that you don't have to go straight to a legislator to start, right? It may just be talking to people in your network to say, hey, do you know anyone who works in this area or who may be involved in Medicaid or Medicare on any level? And just having a casual conversation with one person may have a domino effect that could lead you to a bigger platform, and you're gaining experience and growing and learning along the way. So I think that's one important place to start, is just use the network that you have and build from there.
Yeah, and I can add that, you know, I think depending on the type of person that you are, maybe you feel comfortable reaching out to people, making phone calls, meeting with people. But if that's not the type of person you are, you could maybe feel comfortable doing something like writing an op-ed for your local paper. That would be a good step that someone could do to really draw attention to some of the issues and let people be aware of some of the things that are out there going on with advocacy and obesity.
Yeah, I think that's great. I know that another thing to do is maybe reach out to your colleagues in your region, other obesity medicine specialists, other people who are treating patients with obesity. In North Carolina, we had a position statement that was really kind of onerous, saying that you should only prescribe phentermine or do bariatric surgery as a last resort. And I talked with my colleagues here at Wake Forest and Duke and UNC, and we got together. We put together a summary statement, and I met with the medical board and their policy committee specifically on this issue, and they changed that policy. They got rid of that policy. So I think it's important to look and see within your community, within your medical community, and talk to your colleagues, especially if you come to conferences at the Obesity Medicine Association, which everyone should. Mm-hmm. But come to the conferences and meet with your colleagues in your state and or work to develop a state obesity medicine society, so that you can advocate on behalf of the patients with different agencies within the state.
Yeah, one thing that I learned was that Medicaid has a P&T committee for each state, and they take volunteers. So you can actually volunteer to sit on that committee, which I did. And so I'm really excited to have that seat at the table and be able to really see a little bit more about how all these kind of decisions get made.
That's fantastic. I think that's a great point, to be involved in the pharmacy and therapeutics committees for Medicaid in your state. That's wonderful. So we've talked a lot about ways that medical providers and healthcare providers can advocate for our patients. Are there some things that patients can do or family members can do to advocate for themselves, Emily?
Yes. So patients' voices, I think, are the most impactful when we talk about how change is going to be elicited on these higher levels. But I do think it's also our responsibility as medical providers to be able to armor patients with the confidence and the knowledge that they may need and also the resources that they may need to be able to share their stories. So number one, I think, is just helping our patients understand obesity as a disease, right? So removing some of that self-blame or shame that patients may have, internalized over years to help them gain the confidence to advocate for themselves is important. Encouraging patients to be aware of and to use patient-first language, so a person with obesity, and to be able to correct that in their providers or in people around them, I think is a small way that patients can advocate for themselves that may have a huge impact on the way others think about obesity. And also pointing out any misinformation that we may see, so patients or family members, when you're hearing something or seeing something, to not be afraid to speak out about it. All of those are ways that patients can really advocate for themselves. Even things that we can do in conversation as patients, in conversation with our providers, thinking about, how are, there may be certain ailments that patients come to their provider with to say, I've had this knee pain or I've had this chest pain. There was actually a study done where they were able to show that when patients came to their provider with complaints of shortness of breath, that if the patient had obesity, the provider was more likely to stop further testing and just blame the shortness of breath on the person's weight. And so teaching our patients to ask probing questions to say, if I did not have obesity, what maybe would you, do to further investigate this shortness of breath or this pain that I'm having? These are ways that patients can hopefully start to change the minds of the providers that are taking care of them. And so they may, while they're also advocating for themselves, they may create new advocates in other areas of their medical field that we don't have now that could be allies, moving forward.
Yeah, patients do need the confidence to advocate for themselves. And they also have challenges just within their own families, as families is often considered the number one source of stigma and bias towards patients with obesity. And they get comments like, oh, you took a medication for weight loss, you cheated, and things like that, that are really frustrating to hear. So are there particular organizations that patients should know about to maybe learn more about advocating for themselves?
Yes. For sure. Obesity Action Coalition and Dr. Davison, if you want to talk a little bit more maybe about what patients may find there, what providers may find there.
Yeah, there's a lot of tools there on Obesity Action Coalition. If you go to their website, it's really, really interesting. They have lists of people who will treat obesity that you can, if you want to find a physician or a clinician who will treat obesity, that's one thing you can find there. There are resources there about how to advocate. There's a place on there where you can report if your employer does not cover obesity treatment so that they can start kind of tallying which employers cover it and which don't. So there's a lot of really, really great resources on there. And the other thing I would just like to add is about patient stories. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but people don't always want to talk about obesity, unfortunately, but their stories are so powerful. And so if people are willing to share, and like you said, people will sometimes even be shamed, even if they did successfully lose weight, they'll be shamed that, oh, you cheated, you did it with a medication or whatnot. But if they describe how that technique helped them and how it changed their outlook more than other things they've tried in the past, those stories are really, really powerful and really are just really important to start, especially if we're talking to legislators. The physicians can say, all kinds of things, but if a patient tells their story, that is just really powerful because, if a legislator is looking at a bill, if they can see how it's going to affect their constituents, it can really be important for them.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Testimonials are extremely powerful and can really help change people's minds. Laura, tell us a little bit more about what are the opportunities within the OMA for advocacy.
Yeah, so the OMA has an advocacy organization, like I said, that I am on. And if you're interested in that, there's applications every year that you can join if you're in the Obesity Medicine Association. And there are also, there's positions called STARS, which are other people who maybe do not sit on the advocacy committee, but maybe want to be involved as someone who, you know, we contact if there was specific legislation going on in a state that might relate to that person and they could be helpful. So those are some of the opportunities that are out there.
Okay, that's great. And, you know, I think also ending with the opportunity that we began with, and that is working that prior authorization process, fighting for your patients. Every time you get one of those approved, then it is, I think, pushing the bar forward to get insurance companies to cover these on a more regular basis. As they have to improve more and more of these agents, they're more likely to then change their policies of coverage. So I think we can really have a long-term impact there. It's a pain in the neck. It takes a lot of time, but each one that we change, I think, moves the bar forward and hopefully gets us to better coverage for our patients.
Yeah, if there's one final thing I could leave people with, it's the phrase, it doesn't hurt to ask, because I think sometimes, you know, you don't know if you would be effective advocating, but you'll be surprised. I was surprised in this journey. I started just asking questions, finding out who was involved in different decisions. And I would just ask, what would it take to make this happen? And you'll be surprised. Sometimes you might get further than you think. So I always encourage everyone, don't hold back, ask the questions, and you may get some great results.
That's great. See something, say something, right? Do something. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And this is a part of a series of podcasts. So look out for other podcasts on this very important topic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about Obesity Medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.